everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Okay. Sorry it's been a long time. It's been a really long holiday season, and I despise anything holiday related, so I've been in a hole for the past 3 months. Honestly, that's not true. I've been mostly at my desk miming the Hakka to 5-year-old Chinese kids, and I also started a new job, too. But I refrain from posting anything around the holidays, mostly because I think everyone's stupid. No more than usual. It's just that the holidays are usually when the cretins come crawling out of the woodwork, especially New Year. It's the worst. That's when they daftly proclaim, "New Year, new me, good vibes only," or make that argument, "Die Hard's my favorite Christmas movie," even though no one is opposing that. When I see posts like this, I just assume two things. One, you lack creativity, and two, no one's giving you any attention. And you can be proactive too when you see messages like this. Don't cave in and give those people the attention that they so desperately seek. Anyway, we're just now into the first 2 months of the year, and boy howdy, 2020 has been quite memorable so far. It's barely even begun. To start, the state of Illinois raked in over $3 million from their first day of legalized recreational sales, so well done there. The security footage of Epstein and his cell has conveniently, mistakenly been deleted with no way to recover it. Australia is literally on fire. Fortunately, lots of celebrities have donated to charitable efforts there to help contain the blaze, like Sir Elton John or Chris Hemsworth. Even Metallica has donated to the cause, and they all donated more money than Jeff Bezos, the world's richest reanimated jowl. To put my ire for Jeff Bezos into perspective, here's some free math. Chris Hemsworth donated $1 million to Australia for their fires. So did Jeff Bezos. Actually, Jeff only donated 1 million Australian dollars, which is roughly 690,000 American dollary dues. Anyway, so Hemsworth made $15 million from Endgame, the biggest movie of his career so far, arguably, and he made $15 million. Jeff Bezos, on the other hand, makes between $2,400 and $3,100 a second. So in 2 hours, he makes over $17 million. In 2 hours. He made more than Chris Hemsworth did filming Endgame for over a year in 2 hours. Also to note, his company paid $0 in federal income taxes on $11 billion of profit in 2019, and he generously donated literally less than 8 minutes worth of his yearly income to charity. That would be the equivalent of me dropping 11 cents into the bucket in front of Walgreens and patting myself on the back. Job well done. Yeah, again, it goes without saying, but if you want to come in here and talk about how I should go out and work hard too and be successful like Jeff Bezos, then I hope you choke on that boot you've so obviously lovingly deep-throated. And to top it all off, our jaundiced chimp foreskin of a president is trying to start World War III because he was impeached. Also, just as an aside, everything I just said, I wrote it at the end of January. Since it's now nearly the end of February, oh wait, it's March 1st. Since then, Kobe Bryant has died in a helicopter crash, Kirk Douglas died not in a helicopter crash, Trump was acquitted by the Senate on the articles of impeachment for abuse of power because of course he was, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl for the first time in like 50 years, and Rush Limbaugh is unfortunately still alive, but he does have lung cancer, as it turns out. Ah, well, I mean, that last one's good news. Probably the most interesting bit of news of all is this novel coronavirus that has emerged from the Wuhan province in China. The virus was first denied to even exist, and now it's become a pretty widespread global problem, to the point that there are a lot of places in China that, you know, had curfews that encouraged their, you know, citizens to stay inside. They also had travel restrictions. For full disclosure, most of the students that I teach are based in China, so I'm very familiar with a lot of them being on curfew and being encouraged to stay inside. I've personally had students tell me that they haven't been outside in over 30 days, so I've known that this has been going on for a really long time in China. I know China has a pretty restrictive government on social media, but they have been very restrictive about keeping people just out in public in general in an attempt to kind of call the widespread disease that's going on. And it has been widespread. At the time of this writing, the total number of cases worldwide is hovering around 80,000, with the death toll being just about 2,400. The vast majority of those being in mainland China. In fact, as of yesterday, the United States had its first COVID-19 death. It was a man from Washington State who was in his 50s, and he had other underlying health issues. He's also known to have no history of travel or known contact with anyone suffering from the virus, which is particularly alarming because up until very recently, the only people who had this virus were those who had traveled through Wuhan or came into contact with someone who traveled through Wuhan. But this person has had no known contact with anyone suffering from the virus, which means he picked it up in the way that other people generally pick up viruses, which, safe to say, the virus is now just kind of out in the world, free for all. So, with this news, the state of Washington declared a state of emergency due to the virus, which means that pretty much any hand sanitizer and face masks have been bought up. Those supplies are being exhausted. In fact, the Surgeon General released a statement for the general public to stop purchasing face masks because all it's doing is creating a shortage of the masks for health professionals who actually need them. A lot of the research points to normal people wearing masks being pretty ineffective to stopping the virus. First of all, depending on the type of mask that you purchase, it may not be the correct type to keep any sort of virus from entering into your mouth or nose, which, you know, kind of defeats the purpose of the mask. But also, some people don't really wear them correctly. And I mean, if you have facial hair, forget it. The mask isn't going to help you at all. The best defense for the virus is just to wash your hands, stop touching your face, stop touching other people, you know, the usual stuff. But what makes this new coronavirus particularly scary is that it's not unlike SARS, which also emerged in China back in 2003 and it killed roughly 800 people. But also, pretty much everything about the virus is scary. The mortality rate is pretty alarming. There are people who have recovered, but there's no type of research that suggests that these people couldn't then go back and reinfect other people who are healthy. There are people who are asymptomatic, meaning that they don't even know that they have the virus because there are no symptoms presenting, and they are also continuing to infect people. And as it turns out, unless you regularly travel through Wuhan or in other major hub cities that have experienced a really strong outbreak, you're likely not going to just come into direct contact with the virus. So the mask, for all intents and purposes, is not going to protect you in the same way that just basic hygiene will. And truthfully, the most current research suggests that the most dangerous thing that you can do is just touch your face with dirty hands. So really, truly, the mask would only serve as a deterrent from you touching your face. And I mean, if you have glasses, then that should already be a deterrent for you touching your eyes, but it's not going to just block out the virus. Most masks can't. So people who are panicking and going to Walgreens and buying every box of paper masks available are just creating a dangerous situation for medical professionals who need the masks to treat patients because now there's a shortage. Probably one of the most concerning aspects about the virus is its capability to kill perfectly healthy people. Anytime that there is a flu outbreak, the more susceptible populations are affected the hardest. So we're talking about people with underlying medical conditions and people with compromised immune systems. Those are always the populations that are affected the worst by any type of flu. So it's not unusual to see casualties in that. In fact, there have been many people who have passed away just from the common flu this year, just on the strength of having a compromised immune system to begin with. However, the coronavirus is more interesting because it is also killing presumably healthy people as well. As of now, there are no known vaccines, though there are many in trials. We're still not sure of the exact origin of the virus, apart from the location, and the method of transmission from person to person is mostly unknown. The prevalent theory seems to be respiratory transmission, so your standard coughing, sneezing, things like that, where the virus can infect mucous membranes. All of this just means the National Guard is prepping for a pandemic. The United States Postal Service has ceased mail operations and deliveries to China until at least April. I expect that number to move further down. And, the casual racism and prejudice against Chinese people, that's pretty much what I expected it to be. There are some Chinese businesses that have complained that their stores and restaurants are empty, and people have made enough comments online about Corona beer that I'm certain it's not a meme. I am, of course, referencing a Twitter poll that found that 38% of Americans wouldn't drink Corona beer under any circumstances because they're afraid of contracting the coronavirus. You should know, though, that this poll was originally published by a PR agency that have been kind of reluctant to release the actual wording of the questions presented in the survey. Apparently, the questions pertaining to Corona beer were folded into questions about the coronavirus in general, and the PR agency has kind of twisted the results of the poll around to make it seem like 38% of Americans really are that stupid, which we readily accepted just because it kind of confirms these feelings that we've had about each other all along. Other news outlets have published them because in exchange for having journalists that actually want to report news, they just kind of want to be the first outlet that reports something as ridiculous as the idea that 38% of Americans feel like you can actually catch coronavirus from a brand of beer of the same name. So, again, a great PR stunt, but not actually the truth. I want to believe that we all collectively have a deep appreciation for sarcasm and enough intelligence to recognize it online when somebody posts a picture of Corona beer and says, "I'm not going to get this virus." But then I saw where Fox News claimed the virus was a hoax created by Democrats, so I go back and forth between worrying about the breakdown of infrastructure versus just hoping a pandemic is the reset button the world desperately needs. But let's take a break, and then when I come back, I'll complain some more. Welcome back, everyone. I wanted to touch on this before the break. Kind of goes in hand with the whole racism thing that I was complaining about. I'm sure we've all seen that picture of the Chinese woman eating a bat, and people have been leaving pretty hateful comments on any iteration of that video that's just circulating around, or the pictures of her eating the bat. A lot of videos just saying, like, "That's what you get. Chinese people eat weird stuff, so no wonder they're sick all the time." I want to clear some stuff up about the video. I went through the trouble of doing this research because clearly some of you have not gone through the same trouble, as is evidenced in your, frankly, ignorant comments. You should know first that the video is from 2016. It was made by a Chinese influencer named Wang Mengyun. She hosts a travel blog, and the clip was filmed 3 years ago. It wasn't even filmed in China. She was traveling to Palau, Micronesia. It was for a travel segment for her vlog. But of course, as the panic about the coronavirus is spreading, so is a lot of misinformation. Again, really any opportunity to come in and burst your ignorant bubble, I'm going to take it. So again, just to recount, it was filmed by a Chinese influencer, but it was filmed in Palau, Micronesia, back in 2016, before the COVID-19 virus became really prevalent. And if you watch the video, you would find out that the fruit bat that she was eating was one of several raised by local people there, so they weren't just catching wild bats. And a lot of countries actually eat bats. It's a daily dish in many countries. So there's really not any reason to be xenophobic because of somebody's food choices. You really should do your research and make sure that the evidence that you're using is actually that, and not just something you saw on Facebook and ignorantly took out of context. But you wouldn't do that, would you? Needless to say, the current situation has kind of re-incited an interest in pandemic movies, and there are quite a few. The most popular theme seems to be zombies, of course. I remember Daybreakers had that thing about everybody turning into a vampire. You have your classic Carriers, you know, those type movies. But they're all kind of lacking. I guess not really lacking because they have so much, but really when you're talking about a pandemic movie, less is kind of more. Which brings me to today's topic, the 2011 thriller Contagion, starring Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, God, who else? Lawrence Fishburne. Even Demetri Martin, for a minute, was in that movie. But in any case, Contagion, I feel like, is the most realistic portrayal of a national pandemic that I've seen. Forget World War Z. Forget I Am Legend, please. 12 Monkeys, Train to Busan. Actually, that last one's solid. Please enjoy that one. It's a really great zombie movie. But I feel like Contagion is genuinely one of the more accurate films in regards to portraying how the world would respond to a pandemic. And if you've seen the movie, you'd agree. If you did see the film, you also would remember that it did not do very well whenever it first came out, which is something that I kind of blame on the marketing. It really was kind of marketed as this really fast-paced thriller, and people actually complained when they left the movie that it wasn't as exciting as they were hoping it would be. And while that may not necessarily translate to the most exciting film, I think that it's really thrilling just because of the accurate portrayal it seems to give to how exactly society would break down if there truly was a pandemic like this. And if you're familiar with the events of the movie, we are roughly in the same position in terms of helplessness, with there not being an active vaccine against it, and just how kind of unknown the virus is and how widespread it is despite that. For those that haven't seen it, let me go ahead and bring you up to speed. Okay, so Contagion, as I mentioned, kind of focuses around a businesswoman who returns from a trip from Hong Kong. On her way back, she has a layover where she hooks up with a former lover before coming back home to her family in Minnesota. When she comes back home, she unknowingly gives this virus to her son. She doesn't know that she's sick, she just thinks that she kind of has jet lag. But she makes her son sick, she dies, her son dies very soon after that, the other man dies, and all of them, before they die, they end up infecting a whole bunch of other people. The man, you know, infects his family, other people in his community, her son infects people at his school. In no time at all, the Department of Homeland Security steps in, the CDC steps in. They both kind of think that maybe it's a biological weapon, but the CDC and the World Health Organization soon discover that this is a genuine virus. They trace the transmission back to her, and they slowly find out more and more about the virus as time goes on. The trouble is, the virus is so strong and it mutates so quickly that they are not really able to contain the virus before they can do enough research to stop the outbreak. And there are other things at play too. Not just the CDC and the World Health Organization finding a cure, but there are also, you know, things that I feel like would be present nowadays. So you have your tinfoil hatters, your conspiracy theorists who believe that the government kind of created the whole hoax of the virus. And then there are people that are going to be snake oil salesmen that pop up everywhere saying that there are holistic cures to this virus. There are actually a couple of prominent characters in the film that believe that. So it's really interesting just to kind of see in every avenue exactly how society would break down. And the numbers are staggering. And it's pretty sobering when you see wide glimpses of the city and you see everyone just suddenly putting people into mass graves. You see grocery stores being looted, houses are abandoned, people are looting other people's homes. There are prominent people that are kidnapped and held for ransom so that when the vaccine is created, that those communities will be able to use those hostages as bartering tools so that their communities can access the vaccines first. I mean, it's really fascinating, and there's no real bad guy because you can see the motivations of every person. I mean, you could argue that the conspiracy theorist vlogger that encourages people to stay away from getting the vaccine is a bad guy, but he's not actively causing the virus. And the movie's interesting because there is no clear-cut good guy either. And I think that's where the breakdown is, because a lot of people didn't appreciate it. They thought it was boring because it just showed different ways how different communities would respond to the virus, but there was no one bad guy that the audience could point to and say, that's the person that, you know, they're stopping this whole thing. And also, there was no White Knight. There was no Brad Pitt that broke into the World Health Organization and gave himself a bunch of random injections and single-handedly stopped the virus, because that would not happen on a global scale at all. It's ridiculous that that was even put into a movie. I don't want to name names, but anyway. So I think I have a deep appreciation for this movie because it's realistic. Because even if there were a vaccine developed, you can't just overnight it to every corner of the world and eradicate this disease immediately. In fact, in Contagion, when they do finally develop a vaccine for it, they have to come up with a system to distribute it by lottery, and they end up doing it by birthday because, just again, to emphasize, the world is a giant place, and because one person in a lab in San Francisco comes up with a cure, does not mean that suddenly they have stores of it available in Macau and Iceland. Those expectations are unrealistic, and I feel like all of the previous pandemic movies, you know, pervaded this idea, have really not helped, you know, perpetuate kind of an accurate portrayal of what would really happen. So that's why I kind of really appreciate that this movie has taken the effort to be realistic about how this would all play out. The film has actually received pretty positive scientific response for accurately portraying the successes and frustrations of science. In fact, there are quite a few scientists that have cited the movie as a great success in reconstructing the course of an outbreak, you know, so that it can provide crucial clues like how people are affected, how people get sick, transfer the virus, and how many of them die. And it's really nice because typically when movies take on a scientific element, they tend to sacrifice science in favor of drama, which I appreciate wasn't done for this movie. For some people, it made for kind of a boring movie, since there wasn't one guy with a shotgun who just made a cure by accident, because that's not how science works. Science is a lot of painstaking trial and error. And then eventually, there is a success. It just showed scientists continually trying to create a success until one day they did. Meanwhile, while they were working for success, a third of the world's population died. But that is how it would go when there is just an unchecked virus wreaking havoc on society. And the movie is nearly 10 years old. Now, as soon as news of the virus had really started to spread, the world responded pretty quickly. We have more resources than before that we can dedicate to the study and eradication of this disease. I mean, Chinese scientists were able to sequence the genome within weeks, and the global scientific community has been sharing genomic and clinical data at frankly unprecedented rates, and work on a vaccine is well underway. The Chinese government, Italy's government as well, is enacting pretty dramatic containment measures, and the World Health Organization did not hesitate to declare an emergency of international concern. And all of this happened in just a fraction of the time it took to even identify the bird flu back in 1997. So it's pretty amazing how fast, you know, people are working towards a cure. Meanwhile, the outbreak is continuing to spread. So, again, I think it's important to have a movie like this because it is portraying accurately how society would respond. And that's exactly how we are responding. We are dedicating scientists and medical studies and research to eradicating this disease, but people are still dying. In fact, there's a Harvard epidemiology professor, Mark Lipsitch, who is holding the belief that the virus will not be containable. Because of course, containment is the first step in responding to any outbreak, but really, despite how effective China was in kind of enacting curfews and keeping people in their homes and keeping them out from the public. As we know, there are thousands of people worldwide, 80,000 as of the time of this recording, that have the disease. So it's spreading, the prevention of the infection is proving to be challenging, and there are people that, A, don't believe a vaccine would actually stop the new coronavirus as of now, and that it's very likely that we will all contract the virus, or a mild form of it. Another thing I wanted to mention, I really appreciated how Mitch, the main character of the movie, was immune to the disease. His wife didn't give him the disease, and he never contracted a disease throughout the film, but they had no use for him whatsoever, even though he was immune to the disease. At one point, whenever he is in quarantine, he's talking to one of the doctors from the CDC, and he asks, you know, couldn't you take my blood and make a cure for it? And she just dismisses him. She says, nope, there's no way. It's too expensive to do that, and there's not really a reliable way to make a vaccine. And I feel like that was a really important point to make, because that's not how you make a vaccine. Essentially, vaccines are made in a way so that they can kind of imitate an infection. And with this imitation, it tricks your body into developing an immunity to it. So you have to have a way to mimic the virus. So just taking somebody's blood who is immune is not going to actually help them develop a cure. So I was glad to see that they didn't use the one mad lad with the good blood trope. So in this time when things seem especially bleak, how do you prepare yourself from a pandemic? The best thing that you can do, first of all, stop buying masks. Masks are effective for people who are already sick, and they are mostly for healthcare professionals who constantly have to come into contact with people who are sick. You are likely neither of those things, so stop depleting the supply of masks. Seriously, the Surgeon General is saying, stop buying masks. You're creating a shortage for healthcare professionals. So that's the first thing you can do. Second of all, wash your hands. A lot. Wash your hands when you touch the doorknob, the ATM, your car keys, someone else's car keys, your booger picking fingers. Wash those things. They're disgusting. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face without washing your hands first. If you don't have soap and water nearby, use hand sanitizer. Your mucous membranes, so your eyes, your nose, your mouth, those are going to be the places where you're more susceptible of getting sick, and your hands are just these disgusting meat gobbets that are going to sponge up every virus and bacteria that's on the surface of something. So wash your meaty gobbets before you pick your nose, bud. Come on. And also, you're probably washing your hands wrong. You're supposed to do it for like 30 seconds, or the time it takes to sing happy birthday to yourself twice. The coronavirus has a lipid outer layer, so it will wash away with soap and water. But don't let your paranoia and fear of the unknown be an excuse for you to be super racist to Asian people. Feel like I really shouldn't have to tell people that. Anyway, I hope that this finds you in good health and happy spirits, and hopefully I will see you again soon. Bye! Seriously though, wash your hands. You've been listening to The Couch with Decomposer. If you like what you just heard, you can find this podcast hosted on Anchor and also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Radio Public, and Stitcher. From any of those, you can subscribe to catch future episodes, listen to past episodes, leave a rating, comment, or review, or you can simply tell a friend about the show. We like that too. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next time.